Welcome, everybody, to the Business of Sport podcast. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli. I am your host. And as he does every single week, Mr. Rob Biel, my co-host, joins me on the show. Rob, how are you, buddy? How's things?
How you doing, my friend? I got to represent tonight after last night's big victory for my alma mater. So I know big win by the Blue Devils, and always good to see you, my friend.
At Clemson. Jeez, it's been an interesting 24 hours. The internet's filled with memes, excitement, parties. I'm sure nobody slept on campus yesterday. Everyone was partying for sure. Unbelievable. College football week one, a week of upsets, 100%. LSU, TCU, and Clemson, all favorites gone down in stunning fashion. What a week it was.
That's what happens when you got 18 to 20-year-old young men out there playing ball, and sometimes you get a mix. Obviously, all three of those games were high profile games, lots of fanfare and coverage. Primetime's debut at Colorado, kind of the rematch FSU and LSU, and then last night. An unexpected, uncharacteristic, mistake-prone Clemson team just had their issues in Wallace Wade Stadium, and Duke's a good team, improved team, and took advantage of those mistakes and had a huge program victory last night. So, obviously, we talked about heading into last week the big opening of college football. And as always, it delivered, it delivered in spades. So exciting night for a weekend of football for everyone. And sorry for those whose teams lost, but, for those of us that are just fans of the sport, it was a great theater this weekend.
Absolutely. Let's look at, some of the stats. Duke hadn't been beaten a top 10 program since 1989. I mean, a lot's changed since then. Let's just keep it that way.
1989 was the year after I graduated, and there was a guy named Steve Spurrier that was the head coach of our program. And ironically, Coach Spurrier was honored last night at halftime of the game. So I think the spirit of the ball coach filled Wallace Wade Stadium last night. The only thing they didn't do is take a picture in front of the scoreboard like they did when they beat Carolina for the ACC championship that year. So, but that was a huge win for the program. And again, when you have a stretch like that for obviously Duke's a football is not known as a football program or a football school. Obviously known for more for our lacrosse and our basketball. You need some things to go your way. And last night, blocked field goals, turnovers inside the red zone, a very interesting, application of the slide, the quarterback giving himself up on a fourth down run, where it looked like he got the first down, but since he went into a feet first slide versus a head first dive to get the first down, a targeting call became a dead ball foul, not a live ball foul. So lots of just strange game. Look, at the end of the day, a top 10 program, a perennial top 10 program like Clemson just was uncharacteristic last night. And Duke is an approved team. A very good team, took advantage of those opportunities and capitalized with a national audience on a huge win for their program last night. And, beaming with pride a little bit today. My nephew was at the game. He stormed the field. So, I was there in spirit last night as well. So, and obviously other tremendous games over the weekend. TCU, the runner-up from last year, Dion with a virtually new roster, goes in an exciting high-scoring game. Not the TCU played bad. I mean, it was an entertaining game, high-scoring game. Guys making plays on both sides of the you know, in both in purple and in black and white and gold. And at the end of the day, Shedeur Sanders sets a passing record for Colorado. They had for the first time 300-yard receivers in a game, and just plays being made. As younger Sean Shiloh, you know, had 10 tackles, you know, 12 tackles, double digit tackles. I mean, all of these things that you know, kind of built up around Coach Prime. I mean, they manifested themselves last night. Belief, you know, calling out receipts, in the press conference. And, and more importantly, Coach Prime, you know, he walks the talk, you know, he speaks it and he lives it. And in that game, his team answered the bell and delivered. And some people want to say, you know, shock the world. I mean, yes, they were a bad team last year, but they were a totally new team. I think that, you know, that team, you know, had nothing to lose, and they played exceptional. I think, you know, they're well coached. You know, it was, you know, now, as with anything, you get a win like that, you got a lot of time to build up to it. They got to go to Nebraska this week and go play Matt Rhule. I don't know if I want to be Matt Rhule this week after the way they lost last week. So,
yeah,
it'll be quite interesting, you know, following up. The same thing with Duke as well. LSU, FSU, a very competitive first half, and then FSU just blew their doors off second half. You know, Mike Norvell outcoached Brian Kelly. Mike Norvell has got a very good team. Jordan Travis, not that he needed to announce himself to anybody as a true Heisman candidate, but he validated himself as a Heisman candidate the way he played the second half last night. He needs to put a complete game together, but you know, Florida State was outstanding the second half, and you know, as the marquee games went this weekend, all three of them had you know the underdogs won. So you know, that's college football. You know,
it's beautiful.
We've got some big ones this weekend as Texas rolls into Tuscaloosa. That's the one everybody's going to be talking about. So we're going to get week in, week out of high level college football. I guess we're going to talk about here shortly, you know, the professionals kick off this week. So we're going to be all football all the time here for you know, the next you know, 3-4 months
for sure.
So it'll be exciting. You know, that, you know, college had their really kickoff showcase weekend. They delivered, and now we're going to be getting marquee matches all week, all, you know, every weekend. And you know, just looking forward to seeing what we look like in January when we have a CFP championship game.
Absolutely. Coach Prime's situation, the way Colorado signed him, was unbelievable. They had a shortfall of only $28 million.
Talking about the guts of a burglar, Rick George deserves a lot of credit.
Absolutely.
Rick is a fantastic athletic director, was in a very interesting situation making the decision to, you know, obviously move away. You know, you've got a program, you know, they're in the Pac-12, they're 1-11, you know, a couple years removed of a bowl team. You know, has Mel Tucker leave in the night to go to Michigan State, you know, and the program starts to crumble. I mean, you know, desperate times, desperate measures, and they were a perfect opportunity for Coach Prime, you know, who had success at Jackson State, was, you know, needed an athletic director that had some guts, you know, really. And Rick George, as you alluded to, as he said, when I hired Deion Sanders, I had about a million of the 29 million that we were going to guarantee him in his contract. And when they hired him, you know, the Colorado faithful stepped up. Boosters, you know, they sold out their spring game. You know, donations, season ticket sales, all of those things, you know, the belief. I mean, Coach Prime is, he gets us excited, you know, just listening to him talk, right? And then when you get a delivery game one, like what we had this weekend, I think we've all seen some of the video on social media of Rick George just absolutely finding him in the melee and hugging him and just, you know, validating the hire, but again, you know, obviously the sense of relief of, you know, from him, you know, having that belief and faith in Coach Prime was the right man for the job. Making the changes that he made, certainly overhauling the roster like he did. We've got some kids from Arizona that are on that roster. The kicker, Jace Feely, you know, his dad, Jay Feely, kicked here for the Cardinals. Jace is from Arizona. Excited to see him hit that big kick right before half to give him the lead. I mean, there's always little things within those games when you watch them, and to know Rick George personally, and to see, you know, how emotional he was with that win. Obviously what it meant on the national stage for Colorado now that they're moving into the Big 12, and that's going to be a rivalry now. That's a conference opponent now, not just a regular season opener from out of conference. And look, Coach Prime's history in Dallas. I mean, obviously, is a Cowboy, you know, won Super Bowls, coached there. Some of his kids are born there. I mean, you know, that's a little bit of home too. And you know, he had a lot of support from Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin. You know, some of his former teammates on, hey, don't sleep on Coach Prime. Don't think that he's just a guy that was a great player and that his son, you know, kind of got a easy path at Jackson State. I mean, Shedeur Sanders proved to a lot of people that he is a great player. Travis Hunter obviously showed everybody that he is, as Coach Prime said, he is him. And if he had caught a couple passes, he'd be chilling with the Heisman already after that first game. Yeah. You know, first time we've seen a two-way player like that, probably since Rod Woodson, you know, of that skill. Adoree Jackson was that for USC a few years back. I mean, at the level that, you know, Travis Hunter's playing, you know, 100 yards receiving, interception, passes defense, I mean, was a game changer on both sides of the ball. I mean, there was all kinds of intrigue there, and, you know, certainly the numbers played out for the viewers on all those primetime games. I mean, it was, you know, fantastic viewing and over the weekend, and you know, just, you know, great theater, great results, and like we said, I think I said last week, it's a $1 billion weekend for college football. Those stadiums were all sold out. You know, you had primetime television. No doubt that there was $1 billion transacted over the course of the weekend, you know, as it related to college football.
Well, if we get into some of the numbers, Florida State and LSU scored the highest viewership, 9.1 million viewers on ABC. It's the highest audience for a Labor Day Sunday feature since 2016. Viewership was up 22% on last year's matchup. The game drew a peak audience of 10.3 million viewers. The economic impact on the local Orlando market was $30 million. They reckon it's more, but it's a minimum of $30 million. 45,000 rooms were booked. 60,000+ in the stadium, like unbelievable. And then if we look at the macro, like let's say, so here I'm just trying to sort of show and identify the power that college football attains when they come to a city and the impact that they have on that city. If we look at Alabama, huge football school, of course, we know that. During the season, the Alabama Department of Tourism has estimated that the overall economic impact of college football on Alabama exceeds $200 million, right?
Yeah.
So that's just Alabama alone. How many games are played there, right? There's only like 12 games in a season plus the playoffs, right? So yeah. How many possible games are played in Alabama? So what we're seeing here is this force of nature that's pretty much economically infusing these cities that people would not even think of going out to, other than to go watch college football, to be part of a college there, and so on and so on. So the game's unbelievable. Like, if we look at these numbers, it's just fascinating.
You know, it's a, you know, one of the projects we work on is bowl season, and you know, you get those numbers of what 187 million eyeballs on college football during the course of bowl season, 40 bowl games, and the demographics around it. And you mentioned just the example of the state of Alabama, with Auburn and Alabama, being high profile programs. I mean, Auburn set a record at Jordan-Hare this weekend for their home opener. I mean, you've got high profile programs. They have a bowl game in Birmingham, at the end of the season. The SEC championship obviously played in Georgia, just up the road. I mean, there is tremendous amount of passion and pageantry around college football, certainly in the South, but college football in general. As you mentioned, this weekend was just a prime example of how powerful that sport is, and why. We watched great games, great theater. These are, young men out there, 18 to 22 years old, just performing at a extremely high level, and entertaining alumni, fans, former players, just, media, celebrities in some cases, walking out on the field wearing jerseys to kind of, promote some other issues, around the NCAA. All of that pageantry was with us this weekend. And, again, we're bracing for, another fantastic season ahead of us. And like I said, it was a great kickoff weekend. Numbers showed it, economic impact, great finishes, viewership up.
On field showed it.
And yeah, absolutely. And like I said, ended with a high profile win for my alma mater. So, we can't discount that either.
For sure. All right. Awesome. We'll keep going. We look forward to week two. Lots to look forward to, and we'll definitely recap it next week. Now, time for the Pro League.
Right. The guys can get paid, right?
Yeah. NFL kicks off Thursday night. Huge game. The Chiefs versus the Lions. I don't know if it's huge. I think the Chiefs will absolutely knock them over. But we won't go into the game itself. Let's look at the off-field stuff. This is the beginning of the NFL's new $100 billion new TV deal. And just to break that down, on an annual basis, you have the Monday Night Football, ESPN, ABC, $2.7 billion a year. You have the NFC Sunday afternoon on Fox at $2.25 billion. We have the Sunday Night Football on NBC, $2 billion. We have the AFC on Sunday afternoon on CBS, $2.1 billion. We have Thursday Night Football on Amazon, which is streamed white labeled through NBC, at $1 billion. And pretty much what we've seen in addition to that is the Sunday ticket, which is at $2 billion through YouTube. If we look at these numbers and we look at now where the NFL is and the mixture between cable and this new world of streaming, we're seeing a crossover. We're seeing a transition period where slowly, we're moving towards streaming, and it's led by Amazon. It's led by ESPN Plus. It's led by this new YouTube TV Sunday ticket, which is going to make it a lot more interacting and engaging for fans, because then they can use that content to go and create content from, so on and so on. Cable cutting is happening at a rapid pace. ESPN's in trouble. Apple is looking to acquire more rights. Where do we see things going from here?
Well, I think you touched on it. We're seeing that movement from, fans sitting at home, and watching, you know, and only being able to watch a game, you know, on one of three stations, to, you know, that the fluidity and the movement of the fan, you know, and I think part of that is, you know, showing the, you know, is starting to gravitate and accommodate the younger fan, you know, the more tech savvy fan. But I think this is also very much a byproduct of the pandemic, which really forced every league to get in touch with their technology because their fans couldn't come to the stadium. And once they were able to come back, that's great, because it's nothing like, you know, watching a sport live and being part of it. But what it taught all of the leagues is that you may be able to put 80,000 in the stadium, but, you know, there's another 2 million that are watching, you know, there's more money to be made, you know, outside the stadium than in it in some cases. And I think this is just an evolution of that. And, you know, we're seeing cable companies, you know, fighting with distributors on pricing and, you know, at the consumer at some points, like, you know what, I want to be in control of what I want to watch, when I want to watch it. And certainly one of the last things that we tend to want to watch live is our sports. So I want to control what, you know, when and where I can watch it. You know, it may be on at a certain time, but I either want to be on my boat, you know, at my beach house, you know, in the mountains, maybe in my office, maybe I'm driving to go see, you know, take a kid to college or go see a kid at college, you know, on a Thursday night. And I still want to be able to tune in. The wife can drive and I'll watch it on a stream, whatever that is. I think we want to be able to consume it when and how we want. And the leagues and the NFL being a league that tends to get out in front of these things, their Amazon deal has shown that streaming is successful. The MLS follows up with that, you know, their MLS deal. And obviously, now with Messi doing what Messi's doing, and I know we don't have him on our list today, but oh, by the way, they haven't lost yet. They did go out to LA and you know, handle business. And, you know, we and now the rest of these leagues and now the YouTube, Red Zone deal, these are all, this is all a movement towards putting, the decision in the hands of us, the consumer, but more importantly, casting a wider net, getting more revenue, getting more fans involved, overseas, very much more, tech savvy than the U.S. consumer. We've talked about this before. This, you know, Europe tends to be a couple years ahead of us when it comes to technology in general, but the adoption of it. And so as the NFL is growing its brand with games over there, they're also expanding their influence with that the Zone deal, streaming deal. So, you know, they are already presenting themselves on a on demand fashion over there in Europe. So again, great business. Those of us that, still just want to sit down and watch it on our couch in front of our TV at a certain time, that's, it's moving away from us. And again, I use that collective us. I like to watch it in my house, but I also have no problem. I like being able to watch it on the move as well, working out, whatever. But that fan that, the appointment viewer on my cable TV or on my, not that anybody has rabbit ears anymore, but, at the end of the day, if you're not a fluid watcher, the sports options for you are going to be quite limited.
Absolutely. And it pretty much takes us into this. There's a few new things happening this year as well with the NFL. We have a new era in Washington. I mean, are we going to see a new Washington team? How are they going to be different to what they were under the Snyders? what changes do you think will be made, or if already have been made? You know, it's going to be interesting, because when there's new owners, there's always change, as we've seen with Todd Bowley in the Premier League.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, when you pay $6 billion for anything, I think you're going to want to put your stamp on it. And I think the first change that in that case is that just there is a sense of relief, you know, in the fan base. There's a sense of, you know, a desire to get behind new ownership, maybe at some level kind of re-embrace the passion that preceded the name change and all of that. I mean, obviously the, you know, the Washington franchise has got a long storied history, always a strong, passionate fan base, you know, had a waiting list for years to get on their season ticket list. And Dan Snyder over the years just eroded that away. And I think just when you have change and now you've got old fans kind of wanting to come back, you know, wanting to enjoy their team again, talks about, is there a name change coming? Maybe a name reversal coming? Yeah. Those types of things that, you know what, that re-engages a fan base, and the potential, you know, of a new stadium, all of those kinds of things are breathing, you know, not new life, but new excitement.
Excitement
back into the Washington, you know, brand. NFL community.
Yeah.
You know, that's good, you know, because that's a traditional franchise that, you know, it's good when, you know, it's much better when they're competitive. You know, just like, you know, it's baseball's better when the Yankees are good. And, you know, certainly NFL is much better if Washington and New York and Dallas are good and competitive. You know,
NBA is like better with the Lakers. And
yeah, Lakers and Celtics, you want them good. You want them to be exactly. competitive. You don't want to see them not in the playoffs. Exactly. Those types of things are just good for the game. And so, you know, Josh Harris and his ownership group, just with them taking over has you know, got a lot of optimism in Washington. Look, you know, see what Ron Rivera and his staff can do. I mean, you know, week one's important, you know, and obviously we kick it off with the champs. Champs, you know, it looks like they're going to be without Travis Kelce on Tuesday night. So fantasy owners holding their collective breath that it's not anything more than week one. Everybody's scrambling to get their make their changes in lineups. But you know, again, you know, with the start of the NFL season, you know, it does kick off some of those secondary seasons that we just alluded to of a fantasy. You know, there's probably some people that are much more invested in games come this time of year.
Oh yeah,
because it's their you know, this is their expertise. You know, look, it's an exciting time of year across all levels. You know, looking forward to seeing the NFL season kick off.
There'll be definitely a few homes or a few million homes that have 3-4 screens happening every single Sunday afternoon.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's definitely exciting times. Now, one of the issues that I see with the NFL potentially having is they have three betting partners. They got FanDuel, DraftKings, and Caesars. How does this new Penn and ESPN deal come into the realm of things? What negative impact could they have, or positive, you know? Like, how do you see this working all that now?
Well,
because Penn's paid $2 billion, and this is the most viewed TV of the year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, not only that relationship, but, you know, the PointsBet Fanatics relationship. Fanatics is a massive partner of the NFL as it relates to merchandising.
Yeah.
And here we go that, you know, they too have a betting partner as well. So, it'll be quite interesting. I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, you know, all those deals are certainly non-exclusive. So, you know, if they want to participate, then there's an easy way in. We know exactly what that way in is. And that way in is, you know, you buy into the league category at a certain number, or you're an advertiser. There are certain ways to engage yourself in the process. I would imagine that we'll see both of them, taking their cuts at this, figuring out what their niche is. The ESPN relationship with Penn will probably play itself out a lot on Monday Night Football, for sure. You'll see a lot of the ESPN books, sports books, you know, the old Barstool locations that are being converted over. I think you'll probably see lots of promotions around that. I
think
it's just money, my friend. It's just a matter of money. And do you want to pay to play?
I think we're going to see some of the craziest deals and offerings this year. And I think we're going to see some of the most creative marketing campaigns we've seen in a long time. It's going to be a battle for attention.
Competition like that creates, ingenuity in marketing. And we kind of saw that when everybody launched, obviously. You know, you saw some, BetMGM and Caesars, and you saw some massive, signings for spokespeople around all those relationships, FanDuel and DraftKings and all that kind of stuff. And now, two new players, entering in, and it'll be you'll see some spokespeople around that. You'll see some investment and building some awareness, and like you said, probably some really sweet deals for the new entries into the sports gaming platform this year.
Yep, awesome. Once again, obviously, we will recap next week, but let's see how things play out. All right, let's move to a different sport, F1. We're seeing a certain bull that gives you wings dominate.
Yeah. Probably to the point to where, we talked a little bit about this earlier. Max Verstappen wins at Monza, 10th consecutive win. Red Bull, and with Sergio Perez finishing second on the podium, Red Bull has all but locked up the constructors' championship, and Max is points away from securing, the Formula One title with 10 races left before Vegas even happens.
Wow.
And again, I think one of the things that we talk about here is Formula One has done a fantastic job of, through Drive to Survive and just their, opening up of the sport, engaging a whole new audience, certainly the U.S. audience with, now three races here. I think they're in danger of losing some of that audience with, I think the American sports fan or the North American sports fan likes to see some competition. This is a runaway train. I mean,
sure.
Max is a fantastic driver, and Red Bull has got it figured out. But I think the U.S. Sports viewer is also like, as soon as he takes the lead, it's over. And so, what am I watching? And I'm getting up at a crazy hour to watch it. Certainly, I think people are, we're pushing this. Vegas. Here in November as a big event. But it's like, really, it's going to be over as soon as, qualifying's done and Max is sitting on the pole, unless he crashes or, the engine drops out, then we're just watching everybody chase him. That's really not fun. That's not competitive. And, again,
it's a dead rubber.
Yeah. And again, they're not giving these, access to the Formula One races away for nothing. And so, fans will pay for high level experiences. We're seeing that with Messi. Fans are paying, the price for a ticket to go watch Messi at the LAFC game this past weekend is more than what a season ticket would cost you to watch the Rams.
Stop at 700, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, we will go watch greatness. We will go watch greatness compete. I don't know that the sports fan's going to pay $10,000, $5,000 for a VIP pass to Vegas to watch Max Verstappen basically win the race on Saturday in qualifying. And then, you know, two laps into the race, it's over because, you know, we kind of know what the deal is.
Two laps into the race, you find him in the MGM private suite having some fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, that would be quite interesting if for whatever reason Max decides to take a day off. You know, but again, and this is no disrespect at all to Team Red Bull or Max at any level. I mean, you know, you work hard to dominate and compete at the highest level. The onus, I guess, is on the rest of the field and the paddock to raise your game. And again, if you know this, and this is where, you know, the American fan base would just sit there and go, that's what makes the NFL so great, is that there's parity, there's competition, there's not utter dominance like what we're seeing here. And when there is, you know, Patriots go 17-0, it's funny how, you know, you find yourself back, you know, amongst, you know, the field the next year. I mean, you know, they do a very good job of not letting someone get too far out ahead and start winning five Super Bowls in a row. I mean, obviously the Patriots won a lot of them, but yeah, a couple back-to-backs, but
a couple of nail biters too.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was people that thought the Rams were just going to dominate for a while, you know, with the greatest show on turf. And all of a sudden they play a Patriots team with a young guy named Brady, you know, taking over and stunt, you know, all of a sudden the greatest show on turf couldn't score any points. And everybody was like, I got to watch this. And so hopefully at some level, Formula One can get back to certainly some of the name, you know, this past weekend, you know, the most exciting part of the race was the two Ferraris racing each other for the third spot on the podium and not wrecking each other in the process in front of the home fans. So, you know, I think we need to, we don't want to get relegated to really getting excited about a third place battle. You know, Formula One in general is too valuable and too good of a sport and an event to, you know, have, you know, this dominance going on. But at the same time, you know, I mean, you just tip your cap to Red Bull. They've got something figured out, and until the rest of the paddock figures this out, it's it is what it is, right?
So see, it's gonna take some adjusting and some innovation to catch up, but it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, awesome. Let's keep going. Different kind of football now. Manchester United apparently could be off the market. The Glazers, again, never seem to surprise us. They always have a hidden card somewhere. According to different reports, that they want to hold out till the club is worth £10 billion and put it back on the market in 2025. Ratcliffe and Sheikh Jassim from Qatar still they remain the favorite suitors. There's been limited communication with their fan base. There's some suspicion saying that this whole thing was a whole saga to see how much the club can get. It can also is a dividends push. I don't know. Anything's possible with these guys.
You know, look, at the end of the day, they were very much the talk of the summer. We talked a lot about, Saudi investment. And, you know, again, you know, there's a bunch of different players that were looking, you know, at the club coming off of, you know, kind of a little bit of a return to competitiveness last season. Under Van Tog, and now you've got a team that has a engaged fan base, but they've got a rival across the river there in blue that just won you know, three trophies. And, you know.
And I think it'll win again this year because.
And yeah. Certainly looks built to sustain that. At the end of the day, there are very few opportunities to buy clubs at that level with that type of tradition. The Glazers are, shrewd business people. They probably had a price, they probably had a number that, if it got hit this summer, then they would have sold it. But, here they are. And at some level, in all fairness to fans and the players, let's put all our effort and focus on now that the season has started. Let's start playing. We don't need the distraction of whether or not we're getting sold. Obviously there's the distraction of the Saudi transfer window remains open for another week. So until that ends, then your defense of your current roster is full on full alert. But for the most part, from ownership, let's focus on season. Let's focus on getting back into the Champions League and competing for a Premier League title. If they do that, then as you and I both know, the value of the club goes up, and maybe they hit that 10 million number. And again, how bad does Ratcliffe want it? How bad does the Sheik want it?
I don't think it's Ratcliffe. I think they're more after the Qatari money because they know how much how much they can pay. Okay. What's 10 billion to a Qatari investment fund? Nothing.
Yeah.
Literally nothing.
Exactly. And we've talked a couple of
days of
work.
Yeah.
Couple days work.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll see how that plays out. But now we'll move to a different sport. Cricket, branded as the second largest sport on earth, Viacom 18 lands global broadcast rights for Indian cricket, $720 million deal. So Viacom's strengthened its cricket portfolio by securing the global digital and television rights to Indian cricket. It's a five-year deal. The partnership starts immediately. There's 88 games between September 2023 and 2028. Includes all home tests, one-day international, 2020 matches played by the international team. Viacom was joined in the auction by both Disney Star and Sony and will pay $8.2 million per game, a 13% increase over previous $7.2 million per match paid by Disney Star in the last cycle. Cricket's a huge game. It's a game that's growing in the US. I reckon it's a brilliant move, in my opinion. I think once the local league in the US is established, this is going to lead into that, and I think this is going to help grow that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. When we've talked about the kind of the growth of the game here in the US, and that it's obviously India is and UK are traditionally something the top markets for the sport, and I think in some levels some of the most valuable real estate in sports is the front of the cricketers jerseys in India. I think they have played out as some of the richest deals have been paid for for those kit deals.
Because they get billions of views.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that, that translating into, a rights deal of this magnitude is, again, to us, not surprising, but I think to the rest of the sports world that doesn't tune into cricket. I mean, over here, that's either a bug that makes noise at night or it's someone's secondary, cellular company. We're just as global sports people, understand that, the power of this game. Right. And as it starts to find its way here, in the United States through the Cricket League that's being launched, you're right. I mean, much like, you know, we see, you know, top level soccer talent starting to come over here to play in MLS. You know, when you start getting, you know, top level cricketers coming from India, from the UK, from Australia, that can play this game. I mean, South Africa. I think we'll probably, you know, change it from a standpoint. I don't know that we'll see fans sit around for a couple of days to watch a match. Right.
But I think,
but I think we'll find, a really nice way to, incorporate, you know, the game here, adapt it to where our audience will want to go see it, participate, you know, view it, and then more importantly, see some of the top players in the world come over here to help grow the game. I mean, you know, much like we bring the summer tour of top soccer clubs to come over here to help us grow the game and see some of the top teams play on U.S. soil. I think when you get teams out of you know, India and Australia to come over here and actually play some matches at that level, you know, on the cricket pitches, you know, that are going to get built here, that are in process of getting built. I think it will give a much greater perspective and appreciation for the sport, and then also, you know, allow us to really gauge, you know, the value that we're talking about, you know, that Viacom has paid for the broadcast rights, because, you know, the largest population in the world is India, and this is their sport and they are watching. And sure. So, you know, the eyeballs, tell us the value, for lots of deals, even in our sports. And this is one that, you know, doesn't lie either.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting few years ahead. All right. That pretty much brings us to the end of our segment. Once again, another great show. Time flies when you're having fun. Thank you very much, Rob. It's an absolute pleasure. And for everybody who's tuned in and watching, we'll catch you all next week. Take care, everyone.
All right. Take care.